one. High, deep, right field. Home run number 101. Dead central off one of the umbrellas in right field. And this time, he did not miss the elevated two-seamer. Now, Kobe Mayo, that's a long drive to left field. Up off the moon and into the bird bath. Mullins and Mayo mashing and mashing. Back-to-back home runs for a 3-0 lead. Swings away and drives the ball to deep center field. It will hit the base of the wall. Westberg is in. Henderson hot on his tail, and he is safe standing. Bouncing ball, Bichette. This will be a game-ending double play. 6-3 turned by Henderson and Mayo. A big night for the Orioles offense as they take the opener from the Blue Jays 11-4.
Kevin Brown on the call, courtesy of Masson. And you heard him. The offensive barrage continued last night. The Orioles have now scored 34 runs over their last three games. Now, two of them, of course, coming against the lowly Rockies. But last night was really, really fun to watch offensively. Jason, because everybody reached base outside of Jackson Holliday. Adley Rutschman returning from being on the shelf for a month.
Smacking the ball all over.
He had three hits. Hey, Kobe Mayo could produce against a right-handed starter. How about that? He had three hits. Cedric Mullins, another vintage Cedric Mullins game, robbing a home run, hitting a home run himself. So much good to come from game one.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting. Like, you go up through the first game of the Rocky series, and they had played 19 games this month, and they had scored 66 total runs. Right? Only the Pirates had scored less, and now it's 30-something runs.
34.
So, that's baseball. Yeah, I mean, look, facing Toronto in desperation mode, right? Toronto went to their high-leverage reliever in the fifth inning. That's how bad they wanted to win that game when they went to Little. And they shellacked Little from the left side and the right side. That was a game that John Schneider and those guys really wanted, and the Orioles went and took it from them multiple times and destroyed that staff. Kobe Mayo, amazing what happens if you give a kid a little opportunity. You think we'll hear the JV manager talk about we can't win games with Kobe Mayo in the lineup anymore? Think we're going to hear any more of that nonsense? A lot of people slag Cedric Mullins, including Gigi, frankly, quite a bit. Well, guess what? Ryan O'Hearn, the alleged great trade chips, got a 650 OPS since Memorial Day. Worse than Cedric Mullins. So, you know, O'Hearn, the alleged power guy, who has more home runs? Remind me. O'Hearn or Cedric?
Ced.
Yeah. And they both should have been traded well before now. But it's great to see what they're doing. Adley's at-bats were great. Gunner's in a nice vein of form right now. Westberg's making, he's barreling everything up. Like, it's good to see. It's too little too late, but it's the kind of thing they have to build on the final 55 games.
It's too little too late, but that's what we were envisioning this year. Like, the young core, everyone contributing. That's the type of offense, but unfortunately, the Orioles are at where they're at. They're still 10 games below 500, and the trade deadline is in 2 days. But I wanted to get back to Cedric Mullins, and it's been really cool to see these couple of standout games recently, and just seeing the fans, and we know that Orioles fans, they're smart. They get the situation, the standing ovation.
Even though the front office treats them like they're a bunch of fools and idiots, yes, they are sophisticated baseball fans.
He robbed the home run Saturday, had a big game there. We know that Ced is a streaky player. In April, he was red hot. Then he had a bad cold streak, but maybe this is Cedric Mullins getting hot at the right time for a potential trade suit.
Look, the idea that he had like this decrepit trade value is he's going to have a good, bad, whatever you want to call his season. He's going to have another 2020 season. It might be 23-23. Like, it might be 25-25. I don't know. depend on where he ends up and how much he plays and whatever.
And
but
also
like,
screw that defensive run saves.
Yeah,
the minus
I mean, right. I mean, and
whatever.
I look, I don't agree with Manzolino very often, but yeah, him talking about the difference between outs above average and defensive run saved and how could there be an 18, you know, an 18 point discrepancy. Yeah, I'm with him there. And I don't know which is more right than the other. Look, I think he's going to play center field. Like, it's not too many center fielders you're going to put in front of him. So, to me, he's still a top 10 center fielder in baseball. Did he get on base as much as we'd have liked this year? I mean, no, but like, he's also in a walk year. It's the biggest disappointment in baseball, and they're batting him 8th and 9th every night. And they crowned Jackson Holliday as their leadoff man forever and never gave him a shot to do that. Remind me, when he had a 30-30 season, where was he batting?
Leadoff.
Yeah. So, you know, they squatted on him. He said they never even attempted to re-sign me. I might have done a team-friendly extension here. They completely ignored me. Oh, yeah, and they categorically decided not to trade me when I had the most value. So there's a lot into it. They're human beings. Mike Elias never figured that out, but they're human beings.
Cedric Mullins' time in Baltimore coming to an end, but maybe, just maybe, the team is starting to wise up when it comes to Coby Mayo, where after starting three of the Orioles' first 15 games in July, not counting today. He started 5 of the last 7 games, appeared in 6. He's 7 for 14, 2 doubles, 2 homers, 5 RBIs. And Tony Mancelino already said he's playing both games of the doubleheader.
He absolutely should. It's silly. I mean, it is so backwards that it took us getting to, again, barely over 50 games to play to reach this point. This should have happened the moment he got called up and you were already 16 games under 500 or whatever it was at that time. I mean, it is... I'd like to see the JV bocce ball coach come out between games and say, you know what, I want to issue an apology to Coby Mayo. Like, I'm not very good at this. Like, you guys know I'm not really meant for this. Only Mike Elias, Bobo that he is, would have put me in this situation. But, like, I could have handled it better. And me, not just inferring, but outright saying we can't win with Coby Mayo in the lineup because this, you know, we got to play a broken down Tyler O'Neill and Razor Ramon instead of him. That was really stupid. And I shouldn't have said it. And you know what, Coby? You've dealt with a lot of BS since you've been here, both what's been said about you out loud, what's been whispered about you behind your back, and the way you've been handled with your playing time, and you owe better, and we're going to do better down the stretch. You'll never hear any of that. And the guy who really should be saying it is Mike Elias, because Mike Elias is the one who's responsible for us having to deal with Manzolino every day in the first place. But, like, you know, they don't have big boy pants. They're not a big boy organization. So we deal with Bush League stuff like Coby Mayo having to beg and grovel for playing time. And then when he gets it, having it stripped away from him.
So the Orioles won game one of a 4-game series, 11-4. The O's are in action right now. This is a makeup of a game that got rained out in April. So doubleheader action. 12:35 was first pitch for game one. And then game two is going to be 6:35. Orioles currently lead the Blue Jays 4-3, top of the 5th inning. All 4 runs scored via sac fly.
You don't see that very often with this bunch. It's great to see. Smart situational hitting, not relying on the long ball, taking advantage of opportunities to move people over. And to, yes, you can score runs with outs. It happens. Good teams do it all the time. So, yeah, I mean, look, Charlie Morton is battling. I think that's the best way to put it. Doesn't have his plus put away stuff. Not missing as many bats as we've seen with peak Charlie Morton. I also wonder, you know, it's hot as hell. He's throwing 70 plus pitches. Like, you're 14 below 500 or whatever. You're not going anywhere. Like, well, maybe we get him out of it. Maybe we call it a day. You know what I mean? Like, maybe you get him out of here, like, healthy and call it a day and trade him.
I don't disagree. I think we all expected more than 2 trades, 2 days, almost 48 hours exactly.
I didn't.
Yeah, well, I was trying to be optimistic.
I didn't either.
Yeah, they are who they are. They've shown
they've
been,
one over the
they've
weekend.
They've been here 7 freaking years.
Yeah.
They are methodical, navel-gazing, procrastinating losers. As a front office, they are losers. At the major league level, they take L after L after L after L.
Before we step out, I did want to end on a positive note. And yesterday was Mo Gabba Day, and that started in 2022. But I was looking up. Mo passed away July 28th, 2020. And on the anniversary of that date, the Orioles are 5-0 2021, they beat the Marlins 8-7. 2022, that was the Mancini inside the park homer. They beat the Rays 3-0. 23, 1-0 winners over the Yankees. Last year, 8-6 over the Padres. And last night, 11-4 versus the Blue Jays. So, Mo, definitely with the Birds on that day.
It is pretty amazing. A lot of those games, very memorable. And, like, I don't think he'd ever say this himself, because he's not wired that way. But when people celebrate the life of Mo Gabba as they should, and as when these sports teams celebrate the life of Mo Gabba, like Jeremy Kahn should be incorporated. Like these yes. teams would not like
yes.
Jeremy Kahn and Scott Garceau, yes. but I think Jeremy in particular
sure.
are the reason that this city and anyone who paid attention to it fell in love with that young man.
Absolutely.
You know, and so I just like, I think that needs to be told. Like, Jeremy, being the kind of person he is, was a conduit to take that young man, discover what that young man was all about, and really go above and beyond, giving him a chance to enjoy the gifts he had, to not allow the gifts he didn't have to define him, and to make these teams and these owners and Baltimore aware of what someone with those challenges could still accomplish. So I just hope that doesn't, you know, sort of get lost in the sauce. Trey Mancini had a special relationship with Mo Gabba because of Jeremy Kahn.
I was telling Ben this yesterday. That was one of the cooler moments being a part of this show. Was remember that Mancini was a day game and just
yes.
call after call after that game,
yes.
just talking about the moment, the people in that stadium, because that was very, very special. And look, the fans existed for 16 years now, 15 years, whatever it is. The best moment, the best
Absolutely.
Show was the Big Mo show.
Yes, not even in, no, no question about it.
With Jeremy. And whatever second is, it's a very, very distant second. Well, I was out at One Winning Drive yesterday. Today is Ken Wyman's turn. I am taking a little joy in the fact that it's even hotter today than yesterday. So Ken, he will be calling in.
Football gods know what they're doing today.
Yes. He will
Hat
be
tip football gods.
He will be calling in from practice at 2:45. Oriole Hall of Famer, part of our BBT coverage. He's going to be with the Bobster today at Pickles Pub. Mike Bordick joins us at 3:00, and Buck Martinez, we're going to be talking Blue Jays with him at 5:00.
Yeah, a lot to get to. Perhaps there'll be a transaction made by the Orioles today, although I wouldn't hold my breath. We'll preview the second game. You're going to definitely want to be with us between games 1 and 2. We'll have you covered on the Orioles side there, and it's going to be heavy Ravens and NFL outside of that. A lot of sights and sounds going on at Ravens camp. You know, we've got eyes there with Gigi. And yeah, I mean, look, if they do a number on Toronto here, all of a sudden it opens the door back up, maybe for the Yankees and I guess possibly the Red Sox. It sounds like the Rays are selling. But yeah, we'll keep you abreast of anything going on in the baseball world, as this should be 48 of the more interesting hours of the season from a transaction standpoint.
We gave the offense flowers for last night, but how about the bullpen? 4 2/3 shutout innings pitched. What does the future of this bullpen look like about 50 hours from now? And heck, even beyond going into the offseason, how much of a makeover could be in store? We'll tell you next on The Fan. Orioles, they lead the Blue Jays 4-3 in game 1 of a doubleheader, bottom 5. But going back to last night, Jason, Orioles knock off the Blue Jays 11-4. The offense was stellar. Zach Eflin started the game. He was meh. But the bullpen to follow, 4 2/3 shutout innings. And out of the entire roster, we expect the bullpen is going to be the group that's going to get shaken up the most. They already traded Brian Baker. They traded Gregory Soto. We envision that they're going to trade Sir Anthony Dominguez. Maybe you can get something for Andrew Kittredge. Yeah. But it wasn't the household names yesterday. It was Corbin Martin.
It's the guys you better get used to.
Colin Selby, who got placed on the IL. Your guy, Wolfie, and Cade Strout.
Yeah. Again, these games really matter for Toronto. And the Orioles, the A team, doesn't exist anymore because Soto's gone and Batista. We should probably just touch on, like, when you've got the team's paid broadcasters opining during a game that it probably doesn't make sense for Felix Batista to throw another pitch, he's not throwing another pitch.
No.
Not this season. So that's that. It also, again, begs the question whether they should have known his trade value months ago, weeks ago. And moved off a guy who, on a team this bad, and I got news for you, it ain't going to get markedly better overnight. Whether it would have made sense to move a guy who's only going to pitch a few innings a week and who you have to worry about moving forward. Like, color me always concerned about Felix Batista at this point. He's a big guy with a different kind of delivery who's had a bizarre sort of career, who didn't have a clean return from Tommy John, who couldn't get through the first season back from Tommy John and complete, even though they backed off him pretty significantly and changed that role. And to go from an elbow to a shoulder, I'm concerned. And people talking about how much control you have with Batista, I don't think that's really, that's why you need to trade him. Because I out of that control, how much time is he going to really be Felix Batista, and how much time is he going to be dealing with some sort of an ailment? Like, I see him pitch all the time, and that delivery to me looks different way more often than it should.
Without question.
Like, he's not a guy who's replicating. Even at his best this year, he did not look to me like he's replicating.
Now, you can think of multiple outings that he had where it's like, oh, that's off. And of course, the last time that we saw him in Tampa, where he threw, 36 pitches, he walked three guys, got the save. But that was the last outing that we saw him and probably going to be the last outing of his season.
So I'm going to go on record now as someone who I'd put my mark up against anybody in telling this team what they should do ahead of time. Whoever the GM is, I would be treating Batista next year like he needed to be treated last year, which is you better have another high leverage guy on your roster who's closed games before.
Well, it's not only that, though, Jason. This whole bullpen is going to get reworked. Like, who are the guys that you're like, okay, I'm cool with them heading into next year? And these last 2 months are going to be telling. Maybe one or two of these guys that we were mentioning emerges and could be one of those guys that you could count on for 2026. But when you're trading potentially three or four guys out of your bullpen, it's going to be completely reworked.
Well, and I'm not even as worried about that as just how many of these next men up are going to actually take advantage. And last night they did. That's why we're talking about it. Are going to take advantage of these last 2 months and firmly put themselves in that equation. Again, if they have a real front office at that moment in time and you build a real pitching staff with real depth, not the kind of depth they opined about last year, but Bradish is coming off of Tommy John and Grayson hasn't been healthy in forever. Suarez has never dealt with that kind of role before, and they're throwing names around like Tyler Wells. And I'm like, I don't know if he's ever pitching again. Real depth, healthy depth, then the bullpen could be, if there's no room at the end for McDermott in your starting rotation next year, he better damn sight be in your bullpen. He better not be back in Norfolk throwing five innings of meaningless baseball every 5 days, right? So McDermott, Povich, trust me, they're going to be getting a lot of arms back in return for these deals, and they're not all going to be 19-year-olds. Can one or two of them pop?
Maybe Brandon Young.
Brandon Young. Like that, so that's where the depth has to come from. And then if a Suarez is back on top of that, or Wells actually does ever stay healthy, then that's a cherry on top. But like, if they build out the rotation the way it needs to be built, and frankly, I don't think there's any way in hell Mike Elias in one offseason could check all these boxes. Maybe a real GM, not these guys. And even a real GM, they're going to have their work cut out for them. If you have a real rotation that you think has options six deep that don't include McDermott, that might not include Povich, that doesn't include Young, then okay. And you bring somebody in to supplement Batista if he's still here, who has a closer's background. And yeah, if the Wolfman really pops and sticks, if Corbin Martin, who I've seen pitch a ton at AAA and has always looked like a pinata, if they've now figured something out with him, good for them. But it's going to be an arduous offseason. Like the idea that a couple guys come back from Tommy John and here we go. That's ridiculous.
Well, because they're going to be on innings limits next year.
How could they not be?
Bradish and, yeah, and Grayson, who the heck?
He can't even be.
You can't count
on Grayson. Grayson's got to be in the others receiving votes.
You can't count
on Grayson. If you're coming in saying Grayson's one of my top five starters, you're doing it wrong.
If you're Mike Elias or whoever, you have to go into 2026.
Bro, well, look, they just said he's seeing more people. Grayson's getting some procedure.
Sure.
I told you in Fort Myers, Florida, Grayson's going to end up getting a procedure.
Yeah, so it might be a moot point at that point, but... Coming up at 2:45, we're going to go live to One Winning Drive for a training camp report from Ken Wyman, Jair Alexander, Rashad Bateman. They're both back on the practice field, so that is good news there. But coming up next, we're going to hear some sound from Zay Flowers coming off a Pro Bowl year. How can he take his game to another level? And Greg Lewis talks about Devontae Walker as well. It's Inside Access on 105.7 The Fan.
Man, you just work. I was running hills. I trained with my trainer on specific stuff that I wanted to get done, and we got it done. And I felt like I got faster. I got stronger. I felt better than I did before, even before I got hurt.
Have they said anything to you?
Yeah. A lot of people said that I got faster, that I got more explosive. And, hey, I just put the work in, and I just what I expected.
That was Ravens Pro Bowl wide receiver. That's still weird to say, Jason. Pro Bowl wide receiver, Zay Flowers, who in his second season had 74 catches for close to 1,100 yards, 4 touchdowns, and talked a lot about that at his press conference yesterday, how he feels faster, his teammates and coaches think that he's faster. And he also talked later on the presser, Jason, about they've really been working on the deep ball. He felt very confident that they're going to hit more deep balls this year.
Well, they made major strides in that regard last year. And I think Rashad Bateman, who, let's face it, has a different body type than Zay Flowers and is a more attractive, regular, more consistent downfield option just because it's easier for him to high point a ball. It's easier, you know, for Bateman to win some of those one-on-one jump ball box out situations than it is for Zay. That I think opened things up for everybody else. I think that was a boon to the entire offense. I think it helped Derrick Henry. Like, I think it helped everybody. And I think there is still room for growth. A lot of Zay's big plays, I still think, though, let's be real, it's going to involve catching the ball underneath. Maybe it's more like 18 to 25 yards downfield. And then it's that catch and run ability. It's the yak factor. Once you get the ball in his hands, and he's not even in his prime yet.
Ravens did make an addition to the receiving core, bringing in DeAndre Hopkins. Nelson Aguilar is gone, and Zay talked about working with the vet.
He a vet, but D-Hop been doing this for, 13 years? I was 11 years old when he started doing this. So, you know, he vetted. He know what he doing, and he know how to get the younger guys going. He know how to get himself going.
We talk a lot how the Ravens, they like having that guy in the room. And you can go back to Zay Flowers' rookie year when Odell was here, and he really looked up to Odell, and it seemed like they were very close. And now there's another guy that Zay can learn from. Obviously, much different body types and games, but a guy that's been in the league for well over a decade.
I mean, look, this is a future Hall of Famer, and this is someone who... has been at the top, you know, remained at the top of his craft for about a decade, 10, 12 years, maybe. I mean, last few years have been tough. Age, father time, undefeated, all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, this guy understands how to navigate his way through a season, how to prepare himself to play. He's been an expert in contested catches. He has an innate feel for the sidelines. And he's also, he has a high emotional intelligence. He understands where he is in his career. And this isn't about feeding him anymore. It's not about running an offense through him. But if he does stay healthy, I think 3rd and 5 to 7 yards, red zone, goal, you know, goal to go situations, you know, 3rd and goal from the 8. Like there's going to be situations where he frankly, is a more conducive alternative than even a Zay. In certain situations, I still think he's going to have an opportunity to make an impact on money downs and, you know, in money parts of the season, money parts of the football field.
We did a six-pack last week or 2 weeks ago, just six storylines that are going to pop during training camp. And I believe on your list, Jason, you mentioned DeVontez Walker. He's going to pop, and people are going to be talking about him. Well, here's receiver coach Greg Lewis talking about the second-year receiver.
Just continue to do what he's been doing. He's a young player. He showed some potential last year towards the end of the season, getting in, making a few plays, had a touchdown against the Giants, and we're just trying to build off that. He's a fast guy. He can make plays down the field. He can make plays across the field. And then also special teams comes into that part. If you're not out there first, all right, you got to be doing something to help the team. That goes back to the unselfish stuff that we talk about with Harv's and EDC and top-down type of stuff. So Tez is working his tail off as far as receiver and trying to hone his craft there. And then also with the special teams, but I'll let Hort talk about that. But he's doing a tremendous job of just being in the playbook, understanding what he's supposed to do, and then going out and trying to make plays each and every opportunity that he gets.
Talking with some of the media members out there, it seems like Tez Walker a lot more confident this year. He's flashing more during practice. He had a couple of really nice plays yesterday when I was out there. But we'll see when the games get real. But he's one of those guys in these preseason games, Jason, that everyone's going to have an eye on.
Yeah, he's going to have an opportunity to shine, and I think he'll take advantage of it. Now, I also think Cooper Rush, this is new terrain for him, and I think it's probably going to be rough at times, and it's just he's been in one place his whole career, and things are different here, and this offense has evolved to a master's thesis level, and he's coming in as, yeah, he's been in the league for a minute, and he's seen some things, but I think there's going to be an adjustment phase. So there might be opportunities for a guy like Walker in some of these games, and he's open, and Rush just doesn't see him, or Rush doesn't hit him. That's what the preseason is for, to work through that stuff. But there's going to be opportunities for him also in some of these joint practices to run with the ones and other guys. They're going to get off their feet, and I suspect he takes advantage of it.
Orioles lead the Blue Jays 4-3 in game one of a doubleheader. We're in the bottom of the sixth inning. Mike Bordick is going to be joining us at the top of the hour. Adley Rutschman not in the lineup in game one. You know he's going to be in the lineup in game two, but a really strong first game back from the IL last night. How crucial is this next two-month stretch to end the season for Adley? Mike Bordick's going to tell us at three. But coming up next, it's Ken Wyman live.
Sweating to the oldies.
One winning drive. How hot is it? How hot is it out there? And also, how does Jair Alexander and Rashad Bateman look? They are back at practice. Ken's going to tell us next on The Fan. Well, the Orioles have blown it open in the sixth inning. I asked Jacob Calvin-Meyer yesterday, where are they putting the Tyler O'Neill statue at, Jason? He has gone deep again. A three-run shot,
You should put it in Norfolk, because that's where he spends most of his time rehabbing from this, that, or the other.
A three-run shot, and then it was back-to-back. The Razor hit a solo shot, but we'll update the game in a few, because we got to go out to one winning drive, a scorching hot one winning drive. Ken Wyman joins us. And Ken, let's start with the injury news. We were a little concerned yesterday. Jair Alexander, Rashad Bateman, they both missed practice yesterday. They're back on the practice field today. How did they look?
They look fine, guys. Jair Alexander came out and immediately he was part of either the first or second play of full practice and got a pass breakup immediately. And of course, you could hear him talking immediately. He's playing to the crowd when he's on the sidelines, doing his seatbelt thing. That guy's a character, man. But he looks completely fine. Bateman looks fine. Woozie's out there practicing. He looks fine. So it looks like, I guess, early on they've dodged some serious injury bullets.
So this is apparently a day off for the two kickers. Big Looper struggles. Now he's got an extra day to stew on it. What do you think about that, and are you surprised that they're getting a scheduled day off for two, you know, kids right out of college, less than a week into this, when there haven't exactly been the most strenuous practices to begin with?
Well, Hoyland just kicked. He went 5-for-6, missing a 51-yarder. But I am surprised at Looper. I did see him. He came out of the locker room during practice and then sat and watched while Hoyland did the kicking. I'm a little surprised after he had a rough day that he hasn't kicked as of yet.
Have there been any standouts thus far, Ken?
Devontae Walker made a really nice sliding hands catch. Nate Wiggins, nice PBU on DeAndre Hopkins. They were really battling on the sidelines. Hopkins eventually caught it, but out of bounds. But Wiggins, talking to some people who are out here every day, they basically are unanimous saying if you had to pick a guy who's had the best camp so far, it's Wiggins early on. As Sanusi Kane depleted Keaton Mitchell at one point.
Man, Keaton Mitchell, jeez.
Yeah, and Bo Braid crushed Marcus Major running the football. So it's been a spirited practice.
I thought they weren't going to be in pads. Are they in full pads?
Yeah, they're in pads.
Oh, they're back in full pads. Oh, okay.
They're in pads, and they're hitting.
Scale 1 to 10, how hot is it, Gigi?
Well, if I could scale it, I'm soaked through my shirt hot.
Did you bring a second shirt as recommended?
Good question.
I did not. It's performance, so I'm hoping
doing
it'll
this
just
performance
sort of
thing
do itself. If I were bald, you could cook an egg on my head, but fortunately, I'm not bald.
Now, my weather app, and obviously, we're not in Owings Mills, but it says it feels like 101. So, balmy.
It's warm. It's significantly warm. I don't know what it was yesterday, but I'm guessing that's the highlight so far is the heat.
Is it the highlight?
Well,
that'd be the low light.
It's the standout. I don't know how you
standout,
want to put it.
There you go.
It's basically like I can feel myself cooking. As I was waiting for you to bring me on, I'm sitting behind the shed, and I could just feel my skin baking.
We've buried the lead. Is Dr. Jerry Aloysius Coleman out there, and is there food?
No food. They had food yesterday, though.
Yes.
They did not let the media know there was going to be food, so it was a bit of a surprise. Coleman was here, but I don't think he's here anymore. Maybe disappointed that there's no food, and I think he went to the Orioles is my guess.
That makes sense.
Well, as we were walking out to the field, I did see Aloysius.
It's a veteran
move. Did not bring an abacus, I know, after our counting incident yesterday. But I do not think he's here. I have not seen him on the sidelines here during practice.
All right, Ken, get back out there. Yeah, you should have brought another shirt.
Yeah, I think I've lost 7 pounds.
That's good.
Nice.
So, that's positive.
Yeah, I can't complain about that. And it doesn't. I'm behind the spot a pot, so it
smells
scenic.
Nice.
Yeah, that must be
100 degrees right by a spot a pot. That smells really nice. Well, Ken, we'll see you around 4:30.
Performance, baby, yeah, performance.
Keep it cool.
Performance shirts.
Yes.
Save everything.
Before we step out, just updating you on the Orioles score. Colton Cowser drove in Cedric Mullins. It is now 10-3 Orioles.
Yeah, Estrada has completely melted down for the Jays. No control, hitting people, giving up long balls. And then when the Orioles have popped it up, it's found green grass. It's a bunch of Bermuda Triangle balls. So Toronto now, man. If you're Toronto, you go into this second game desperately looking for a win. I mean, you get swept in this doubleheader and you're down the first three games of this series. I get it. They've got a little lead on the Yankees. But again, I just wonder about their psyche. They've been on a magic carpet ride, and it's been a lot of home wins. They start losing 3, 4, 5 in a row. How do they respond?
That's what I was going to say. What's interesting about Toronto, they've been dominant at home. If they lose this game, looking likely, they will be 2 games below 500 away from Toronto.
Yeah, so they you know, we'll see if they can figure something out here. They got a lefty on the mound in the second game who's pitched really well. That could be a little tough.
Charlie Morton in what could be his final start in Baltimore. It was shaky, but he delivered a quality start. 6 innings, 3 earned, 8 hits, 3 walks, 2 Ks.
He battled. There was a lot of handshakes and embraces afterwards. This is the end of his stint as an Oriole player. He may be there as a spectator for game 2 or tomorrow's game. They obviously don't play Thursday. So this is it for him. Pretty remarkable how he salvaged a season that looked utterly lost by early May. I mean, he looked like he forgot how to pitch.
The fact that we're having a discussion about Charlie Morton being a trade chip after April is
pretty
really
phenomenal.
Remarkable. And he deserves a ton of credit for that for sure. Well, at 3:15, we're going to go around baseball. It's our Twib Notes. Aaron Judge, he's banged up. Could the Rays end up being sellers? whatever the heck's going on with the Emmanuel Clase situation. We'll get into that at 3:15. But coming up next, it's Oriole Hall of Famer Mike Bordick. Want to ask Bordy his thoughts on Adley. Just how crucial are these final 2 months of the season? We'll also talk trade deadline and the offensive explosion. Now 44 runs in their last 3+ games. Unbelievable. Bordy is next. Orioles lead the Blue Jays 10-3, bottom seven. It's game one of a doubleheader. Game two, 6:35, first pitch. Baltimore baseball tonight, the Bobster, and our next guest, Oriole Hall of Famer Mike Bordick, joining us now. And Bordy, it's been a total offensive barrage, and we'll get to that in a second. Adley Rutschman not in the lineup today, but made his return off the IL yesterday, had three hits, couple of doubles. But how critical are the final 2 months of this season for Adley?
Oh, I think they're really important. I mean, not just for Adley, but for this whole organization. I mean, my gosh, they got to save some face somehow, right? And, you know, Adley Rutschman's been the face of this franchise, and he's got to step up to some degree. I really appreciated, and I know he did too, the fact that the crowd acknowledged him and as an important part yesterday of this team. I mean, they welcome back from the IL. Let's go. Get that bat going again. And he didn't disappoint. I think he's so important, and we've seen the importance of a quality catcher, and maybe he's not living up to the 1-1 height, but he's still better than the five catchers that the Orioles have just thrown in there. So I'm excited about having Adley Rutschman behind the plate, the more consistent piece of this Oriole offense.
Well, and the other part of it for me, Bordy, is like, I mean, we don't know. We haven't heard boo from this ownership group, right? So we don't know exactly where everybody stands with them. And I know there are certainly people in the industry who feel like a GM search may be upon us. And if so, like Adley Rutschman is kind of re-auditioning for his job here, is he not? Because with 2 years of control, if you're not sold on him as absolutely your guy, and especially if someone's coming in who didn't invest a 1-1 in him, and you don't think you can get him signed at your price to an extension because he doesn't want to sell low on himself, then I think a world exists where Adley Rutschman is traded in the hot stove league. Not necessarily if Mike Elias is still here, but otherwise.
Not quite possibly. You know, the second you step foot in the big leagues, you're no longer 1-1. You're just another player, and you got to find a way to hold your own value, and you got to be able to contribute and put up pretty good numbers. And Adley has been a shell of himself for over a year now, so he's got a lot to prove, you know, for himself and to continue to play, because I don't know that there are going to be many teams that want the Adley Rutschman that we just witnessed over basically yep. a full year. So, you know, he's got to stay healthy, and he's got to show he can be a more consistent contributor offensively. And I think he will. I think he's got a nice head on his shoulders, and I think he's going to figure some stuff out offensively, that's for sure.
We're speaking to Oriole Hall of Famer Mike Bordick, also part of our Baltimore Baseball Tonight coverage. It's Inside Access on the Fan. Gunnar Henderson just hit a Weaver, a three-run shot. The Orioles all over the Blue Jays, 13-3. Jason, do you have that run number? Now in the last 3+ games, this Orioles offense, Bordy, has scored 47 runs after scoring 66
in the first 19 games this month.
Everyone's hot, man. Everyone's hot. Bordy, Westy, another three hits today. Laureano, two hits. Gunner, three hits. Heck, even Tyler O'Neill joining the party. Where has this been?
I know. Well, it's nice to see. And I think there's collectively a degree of excitement that everybody – this is the most healthy this lineup's been, right? You finally get guys back in there on the field. And, you know, this hitting stuff, it really is contagious. And when this team, I think – they start rallying around each other, you can see how dominant they can potentially be. And can it be sustainable, or is O'Neill going to, you know, get hurt again, or is something going to happen? But listen, they can be very productive. This is what everybody was kind of counting on all last offseason, knowing that the pitching wasn't going to be there. Can their offense be sustainable and put up, you know, 5+ runs per night? Well, I don't know. They've shown some pretty impressive stuff here the last few days. And this is something, though, that, you know, they've given us flashes and hope, but they've never been able to ride it out for a while. So let's hope they can keep this up and find some semblance of consistency, because it's nice to say, hey, you're on a nice run, you're scoring 10 runs a night, that's great. That's not sustainable. What happens when all of a sudden a couple guys aren't as hot and, you know, then you got to battle for runs? Can they do that?
Forty, we're now just 50 hours away from the annual transaction period in Major League Baseball expiring. The Orioles have been tabbed by the industry as the team with, you know, the most obvious pieces to sell for the longest period of time. One of the trades, they said Baker, they weren't even trying to make it, fell from the sky. They had to take it for a draft pick. And the other is a guy, Soto, who, let's face it, was more down than up the entire time he was here. Are you surprised they haven't been more proactive here? Like, we saw Eugenio Suarez get hit by a pitch last night and get, you know what I mean, on the hand. Like, I don't even know if Arizona's going to be able to trade him now. Like, are you surprised they haven't been more diligent starting to thin out the herd here?
Well, I'm surprised that the market hasn't been as aggressive, because the need for so many of these question mark teams, you know, is really all about pitching, if you ask me. Mm-hmm. And there just hasn't been the aggressive moves that I thought were going to happen. Maybe some teams are just waiting for that final deadline and hoping that they can get a little bit more. But, yeah, I thought the Orioles were going to be, you know, the front runner and try to be a little bit more aggressive. But I will say this. Almost all their players have lost value over the last month or so. You know, yeah, sure, they're putting together a couple good days and maybe a good start here and there. But what they've done over the last month and a half hasn't done anything to make another team that's interested in landing a player feel really, really good about what they're getting. So I guarantee the value is down, and you're not going to get much. But, you know, the hope is they can bring back at least a few young arms along the way.
Well, Bordy, one of those guys that was in a really long cold streak but has been hot recently is Cedric Mullins, who has another two hits today, another two RBIs. How cool has it been just seeing these vintage Cedric Mullins performances over the past couple games, robbing multiple home runs, hitting multiple home runs, getting the well-deserved standing ovations?
Yeah, oh, I love it, man. Hey, listen, we all know when Cedric Mullins puts the full game together, he's as exciting and dynamic as anybody. I mean, he still runs as well as anybody. His lines in the outfield, his pursuit angles to the balls are as well as anybody. His timing up against the wall is as good as anybody in the game. The only knock is he can't throw, and his bat's been very inconsistent. But when his bat is consistent, wow, can he add a huge spark to any lineup. So, you know, I think teams are looking at Cedric Mullins, and I know us as fans appreciate that because we have seen it. Unfortunately, it just hasn't been as consistent over the last couple years.
How bought in are you on new, improved, totally fixed Trevor Rogers?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm bought in until he proves otherwise.
Yeah.
You know, this game to me is so mental, and I think a lot of times, and he talks about the mental game, the toughness part of the game. If for some reason he loses that mental edge, whatever he's locked into, and has a hard time, you know, getting it back, you know, that's when there should be some concern. But right now he's you can tell he's really confident. He believes in everything he's throwing. I think he believes he should be here, and I think that's the most important thing. Many times young players, man, if they get rocked or if there's a setback, they start questioning whether or not they should, if they're really a big leaguer, are they really good enough to do this every day? And most times they are, but a lot of times you just got to overcome that mental hurdle and trust in your preparation and don't think you have to do anything really outside yourself. Just kind of trust, like what he says, stay in the moment of each pitch and execute. Ground ball comes to you, catch it. If this calls for a fastball down and away, execute it. That's the name of the game.
Bordy, what's happening on the Be More Baseball podcast with Jerry?
Wow, Tim, thanks for asking, man. We had a great guest this morning, former general manager, J.P. Ricciardi. Now, I don't know if you guys know this name. He was a former general manager with the Blue Jays. He was a scout. He was the scout that signed me back in 1986 out of Cape Cod. And he ended up signing me at the end of my career with the Blue Jays. We had a great time catching up, but he's got some really interesting insight on analytics, because he was with the A's when Moneyball kind of came in, and he's got a really interesting perspective. You got to tune in and check that out. Yeah, J.P. Ricciardi, longtime baseball guy. I love him, man. He gave a great interview. So check it out on the Be More Baseball podcast.
By the way, Bordy, before I let you go, Jerry texted me this. I hope he texted you it as well. This day in history, July 29th, 2000, you homered on your first pitch as a Met.
Oh, let's go, baby. Come on now. Well, that was one of the greatest highlights of my personal career. When I think of that, I'm like, how the heck did that happen? You just don't plan for stuff like that to happen. I didn't want to get traded. I was happy I got to go to the Mets for the first pitch to be a home run. I don't know. You couldn't have scripted it any better than that, man. The fans really liked me that day, but it was all downhill for me.
All right, so I'm going to ask you a Cakes question here and test your recall. We know that Cakes remembers every pitch he ever threw. So do you remember who the pitcher was and what the pitch was?
Oh, my gosh. Okay, it was the Cardinals.
It was the Cardinals.
It had to have been a fastball, because I always hit off the fastball. And if it was first pitch, there's no way I'm swinging a breaking
ball. Right.
So I'll say a fastball. I feel like it was Bennis, maybe. Andy Bennis, is that his name?
Andy Bennis he kicked around for a while. Yeah, I mean, he was a top pick from the Padres, wasn't he?
It was
Andy Bennis. How about that? Way to go. We owe you a steak and egg sandwich.
Yeah, like he needs any more of that.
Like three, and by steak and egg sandwich, I mean three steaks with five eggs on top of it.
How about this? You got a pickles burger going your way.
What's that?
I said you got a pickles burger going your way in a couple hours. How about that?
Oh, my God. I am so looking forward to that pickles burger. There's nothing better, really. A bacon cheeseburger for pickles? Oh, my gosh.
The grilled chicken sandwich, pretty killer, too.
It's amazing.
All right. Yeah, I'll be down there. Hey, the only reason I knew it was Bennis, because Coleman sent me that video, and I haven't stopped watching it, man, so I keep looking at Bennis's back.
Well done, either way.
All right, buddy.
Thank you, sir. Thanks.
We'll be listening at 5:30, you and Bob.
All right. See you guys. Thanks.
You got it. Coming up at 3:30, it is bounce back, fall back. Obviously, Ken is out at Ravens practice, so I'll even read it from the rundown. Jason going up against his third son, Beltway Ben Hall, at 3:30. But coming up next, it's our TWIB notes, and Aaron Judge, he's banged up. Rays, could they be big sellers at the deadline in about 48 hours? And this fallout from the Emmanuel Class A situation, that's on the other side. It's Inside Access on the Fan. Yankees, they are trying to get back in the mix in terms of the AL East crown. They trail the Blue Jays by 5.5 games and could go down to 5, assuming the Blue Jays end up losing this first of a doubleheader. The Rays homered again.
Man.
It is 14
ball is flying
to 3 in the eighth inning. But Yankees, they were dealt with a pretty big blow on Sunday as Aaron Judge was placed on the IL due to a flexor strain in his right elbow. There is no tear in the UCLA. Expectation is that he's only going to need 10 days away from the team. Boone, he said that he's going to be eased into the lineup, just DH for a while.
Yeah, that's a problem for them because that bumps Stanton to the bench. And what is a while? And, you know, will they risk playing him in the outfield much and having him have to charge balls and throw balls? And if not, then it shortens their lineup and you know, there's no Stanton. And I don't know. It feels to me like that lineup has been contracting since late May in general, when Judge stopped batting 400 and when, you know, Goldschmidt came back to earth and Volpe's still Volpe and Austin Wells hits homers in the Bronx. He doesn't really do anything else at the Bronx, and he doesn't do anything on the road. They've got some issues there. You know, Grisham had the amazing start. He's come back to earth. And I don't think Cashman is a guy who I think they still hoard their prospects. I don't think they go all in to win titles anymore. So next 48 hours are going to be really telling for them. I'm not buying what they're selling about Judge. I think there has to be concern about an injury like this and it getting worse. And I think he's going to DH quite a bit. And I think that's a problem for them. And they better go get another bat who can play a position, because Ryan McCann is a glove. He's not a bat.
Bordy just mentioned this with us. Are you surprised there haven't been bigger moves yet, trade deadline wide?
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit. Especially after the Devers trade happened as early as it did. I think there's so much groupthink in this game now. And there's so few organizations that I think are really creative and really kind of go for it and live outside of this bubble. And the Brewers are one who do, but they're having a magic carpet ride season. And I still think they'll add. I think they'll do some interesting things, but they're not going to take on a ton of salary. And then the other one for me, the AL version of that is the Rays. And I think the Rays are one of these teams that, unfortunately for them, there's been two extremes. They were the hottest team in baseball for about 3.5 weeks, and now they can't win a game. And they went from being a prolific offense to one that now really is scuffling. And so I think had the Rays stayed hot, they could have done some interesting buy-side things that might have kicked the market into overdrive a little bit or made other people think they had to start being proactive. And now that, you know, they've had to transition to sellers in a short period of time, I think that set them back a little bit.
I do want to break away. We have breaking news out of one winning drive. Rough ending to the practice. This Jets Rebeck of The Athletic. Rough ending to practice as Isaiah Likely was carted back to the locker room. He got hurt during a one-on-one rep with Sanusi Kane. So Isaiah Likely has been carted off the field out at one winning drive. I believe John Harbaugh is scheduled to meet with the media. Maybe we will get an update there.
Yeah. I mean, again, anytime a cart comes out, heart palpitations follow. It is that time of year. There are going to be teams, unfortunately, due to the nature of this sport, whose the course of their season is going to be altered before they even play a preseason game because of injuries. You know, we saw the Cowboys, you know, thought they might have lost their left tackle to an ACL yesterday. 2 days before that, Justin Fields was carted off, and the Jets are thinking, you know, are we cursed? Hopefully this doesn't, that Fields injury didn't turn out to be that bad. Guyton's injury looks more like a 4 to 6 weeker. So it's not, you know what I mean? It doesn't necessarily connote the worst, but the timing of anything for Isaiah Likely is magnified by the fact that he's clearly trying to get a new deal.
Exactly.
They want to get him done. We know that they're not recommitting to Andrews beyond this year. And, depending who you listen to, maybe they're making some headway towards a deal. So we're all obviously pulling for Isaiah Likely, and hopefully this turns out to be something that's days or weeks and not more.
Yeah, we will keep you updated when we get an update from the castle. But again, if you're just tuning in, Isaiah Likely carted off at the end of Ravens practice. Coming up at 3:45, it is TMI. We're going to get back into Adley Rutschman at that point. Had a really strong first game back. You're hoping that he could pick up where he left off in June, where things were starting to turn for him. But coming up next, it is bounce back, fall back. Who won versus Jason and Ken last week? And also, it's Jason versus Ben, because Ooh. Ken is out at Ravens practice. He'll be rejoining us in a little more than an hour. It's Inside Access on 105.7 The Fan. Before we get into bounce back, fall back, this Orioles offense is en fuego.
It's busting out.
16-4. Orioles lead the Blue Jays as we head into the ninth inning. Jordan Westberg, RBI double. And Jackson Holliday hit the Orioles' fifth sack fly to tie an MLB record.
Crazy.
What? What is going on?
I feel like they went months without six sack flies.
Yeah, it's remarkable. We will recap the game when it is over, but O's lead the Jays 16-4 in game one of the doubleheader. Game two, it's split admission, 6:35 first pitch. But let's look back to last weekend. Dean Kramer will record an out in the seventh in a third straight start. He did not. He completed six innings, got roughed up, five earned. Both you guys bounced back. Tomo completes five innings on Sunday. He did. He completed six, only gave up one earned run. Ken bounced back. He thought five innings, four earned. Jason, you fell back, thought three and a third. O's win the series over the Rockies. They did. Ken bounced back. Jason, you fell back. Two more Orioles will be traded before we have a show on Monday, and there still hasn't been another trade.
Yeah.
Ken bounced back. He thought there'd be three.
Mm-hmm.
Jason, you said no trades,
yeah,
which was right on the nose.
Yeah. Jimmy Butler.
Jimmy Butler. Let's get to the PLL. Utah Archers cover the 1.5 against the California Redwoods. No, Redwoods won outright, 9-8. Jason, you bounce back. You thought the Archers would win 14-10. Ken bounce back as well. New York Atlas cover the 1.5 against the Whip Snakes. They did. They won 11-8. Jason, you bounce back. Ken fell back. Philadelphia Water Dogs cover the 1.5 against Carolina Chaos. They did not. Chaos won outright 15-14. Jason, you fell back. Ken bounce back. Denver Outlaws cover the 1.5 against the Utah Archers. They did.
Smashed them.
15-10. Jason, you bounce back. Ken fell back. You went 3-for-4 in PLLs.
That's what we do at Wanna Bet. I mean, we crush soccer. We crush WNBA. We crush MLB.
Yeah.
But we crush PLL. Tomorrow, PLL Wednesday.
PLL Wednesday. Overtime
with the PLL. We'll get the plays you should make early before the PLL lines move, because they do move.
And for those not familiar, where can they find Wanna Bet if they, is this new to them?
Yeah, you can find the shows on my Twitter at JasonLockin4. You can find them at youtube.com/@WannaBetWithUs. You can go to @WannaBetWithUs on Twitter. Beltway Ben's got us doing stuff on the TikTok.
Oh, yeah. You're on the talk?
We're on the talk. We're talking it up.
Yeah. That's big.
Like Ben said, we're dominating the world.
And this is free. You don't have to pay to watch Wanna Bet.
We spend our time pouring over these games and the numbers, and we try to distill it down 20, 25 minutes to give you the very best plays you can make in real time.
Well, let's get to...
We're making money for the people.
Let's get to this week. Bounce back, fall back. Orioles, it's final at Camden Yards, 16-4 winners over the Blue Jays. We'll recap that game on the other side. But Soria's offense, you can't stop it right now. They've scored five or more runs in each of their last four back-to-back games in which they've dropped double digits. Jason, the Orioles score five runs or more in the next two games of this series.
In each of the next two games?
Yes.
Boy, I kind of feel like there's going to be some regression. I mean, this has been bonkers.
Yeah.
I like this kid throwing the second game for Toronto. He's a lefty. He's been really effective. He's looked good against AL East teams. So I don't think they're scoring five in the second half of this game, of this doubleheader, Bone.
Ben?
Eric Lauer's been a stud all year, finally living up to the first-round pick hype that he had years ago in San Diego. I don't think they're going to do it against him. And Jose Berrios has been fine on the road as well. So I'm not sure if they do it in either game, but I'll fall back.
Mean Dean Kramer hit a stinker last time. Mean Dean, he is set to start tomorrow's day game, 12:35 series finale. He bounces back with a quality start, Ben.
I want to bounce back. I think he goes six and gives up three. I don't think it's beautiful, but yeah. I think he does fine.
He usually, after he gets his butt kicked, comes back and surprises you. You think he might be down for a spell, and he's not. I don't think it's going to be that aesthetically pleasing. It's going to be hot as bejesus out there again, although that doesn't seem to bother him as much as some other guys. I think he guts through six and... Yeah, I'll say he qualifies.
Your guy, Tyler O'Neill, he has homered in four consecutive games. Tyler O'Neill goes yard one more time in these final two.
I mean, they're going to keep playing. They're committed to playing Mayo every game.
Yeah.
So he's going to play, I guess, O'Neill against the lefty tonight. Then I don't know that he's playing tomorrow. I mean, this guy's been damaged goods. So I'm going to say no.
Ben?
I'm going to fall back as well. I don't see him doing it again.
All right, let's get to the trade deadline. And the question that we've been asking is, Michael Elias going to do everything necessary? And one of those players that the O's have, maybe some fans are torn because the club option, Ramon Laureano. Ramon Laureano will be dealt by the deadline, Ben.
For a few weeks, I didn't think so, but now I'm pretty confident just hearing reports, so I'm going to bounce back. I think he is dealt.
Jason? Yeah, I don't know how you don't.
There's no guarantee he's going to do this, but I mean,
and the fact that the team option is friendly makes him a better commodity to trade, and all their other trade trips have pretty much regressed some majorly, while this guy's continued to be a freak show. I expect utter incompetence out of them, but I think gross negligence on this one and holding on to this guy, I don't think they're going to do it.
Maybe a curveball here where Mike Elias, after the Brian Baker trade, saying guys with extra years like a Laureano, he's not looking to move. Another player with control beyond this year will be dealt. So Kittredge, even the Razor, or maybe another curveball there. Jason, another player with control beyond this year will be dealt besides Laureano.
I'm praying to God that they're willing to send a prospect of some caliber, like not a B prospect or above, but a C prospect, plus eat some money to get Tyler O'Neill the hell out of here, which would qualify.
That would qualify.
Like, yeah, or if maybe qualify. It's somebody else with a terrible contract. Maybe it's something. Maybe they do that with Sagano to get him out of here to let some young kid throw those innings. Like, I think they've got to be willing to move something, or they add a prospect to just a different outgoing player like Kittredge or something like that to help sweeten the pot. So I'm going to like say, and again, I don't think that's terribly progressive. I'm not going to give them a gold star for doing it. It would just be competence. Like, as many trades as they should be making, yeah, somebody with control should be included in there. Or maybe it's just Heston.
Ben?
Yeah, I think between Ramon or Kittredge, one of those two goes. So I would buy one of them.
And lastly, we're going to set it at a decently high number. Six more Orioles will be traded by the deadline. Six guys will be traded by the deadline. And that could include one of those prospects. That can include all those type of things. Ben, you can count it out loud if you want to.
Kittredge.
Okay, one.
Urias.
Two.
Mullins.
Three.
O'Hearn.
Four.
I mean, Dominguez has got to be.
Sir Anthony.
Right?
Yeah.
Five.
I'm missing someone out.
One of the starters. The Morton, other maybe. Ramon. Morton.
Oh, Morton's gone. Six. Yeah. Yes.
Right. Eflin.
And there's probably somebody else in there I didn't name that I might be a little surprised about.
I mean, realistically, he should probably do eight. So could he at least do five? I think, yeah.
Well, I said six.
You said six.
Six.
I'll say five.
That is a fallback for those at home. We will get you the results on Friday. Coming up next during TMI, we're going to recap the offensive barrage that cannot be stopped. The Orioles, they knocked off the Blue Jays 16-4 in game one of the doubleheader. We're going to recap it next on The Fan. Before we get into the Orioles' big-time win in game one of their doubleheader, we do have an update on Isaiah Likely. If you're just tuning in, Isaiah Likely was carted off the practice field towards the end of practice today. John Harbaugh has met with the media. He said that Isaiah Likely rolled his ankle. He's expected to be out a few weeks. He also went on to say that Isaiah Likely is going to have an MRI tomorrow, and they'll know more then.
Yeah, I mean, look, you don't really know how to couch anything in the moment. You know, it just because it's an ankle and not a knee doesn't mean that that's great news or anything like that. We're just going to have to wait. It's very early in camp. Time remains on their side. But he's a player who is seeking, you know, a contract that would change the course of his life and you know, a generation or two of his family's lives. So someone who has earned a bigger and bigger share in an offense that has become increasingly pass friendly.
We'll get more into Isaiah Likely at 4:15. Ken Wyman is still out at one winning drive. He'll join us around 4:30. Tell us what he saw at that point. But Orioles offense is unstoppable. Ridiculous. Over this four-game stretch. 16 runs scored today. 4 home runs. They tied an MLB record with 5 sack flies. Jason, 7 different Orioles recorded multi-hit games.
Look, Toronto came into this series still playing really good ball. Now, they've been on fire and almost unbeatable at home, and they're not quite the same on the road. But, like, this is a team that obviously just went toe-to-toe with the Yankees. This is a team that, you know, played well against the Tigers, and I know they're fading, but that still had been the best team in the majors or in the American League as of a week ago before Toronto passed them by. And this is sort of unprecedented to see the Orioles attack this many different arms from the right side and the left side. Like, they blew out the best left-sided reliever the Blue Jays had last night. And they did it in the fifth inning, and the game was important enough to the Jays that they used them in the fifth inning. So an offense that had scored 66 runs in the first 19 games this month, which was second worst in the majors. Only the Pirates had been worse. For them to have almost duplicated that over the span of an extended weekend is nuts.
You said 66 in
19.
They have scored 50 in 4 games. 5-0. Unbelievable. And all, Westberg, another 4 hits. Gunner had 3 hits and homered. Tyler O'Neill homered again. 4th straight game. The Razor with 2 home runs. That, like, it's jarring. Said, who we were talking about in the open, he had 2 hits and drove in another 2 runs. It's startling.
Yeah, I mean, they are clearly locked in right now. Any semblance of pressure is off.
Oh, yeah.
You could tell that the guys who know that their time here is waning are just sort of, they've cut loose, right? And they're attacking the baseball, and they're playing sort of unencumbered, and that's showing up in positive results. They've also been pretty fundamentally sound. I guess it's easier when you're playing with 10 run leads, but we haven't seen faux pas on the base paths. We haven't seen ridiculousness in the field. I guess their time is now, Bone, I guess.
Yes. Another player that could be on his way out. Trade deadline, we're right about 48 hours away at this point. Charlie Morton pitched what could be his final game in Baltimore. He gave up 8 hits, 3 walks, but still delivered a quality start in battle, Jason. 6 innings, 3
scrapped.
Earned.
He scrapped. Didn't have his best stuff. Didn't have the put-away swing and miss stuff. The curve wasn't the hammer that it's been really for most of the time since he reemerged from the bullpen. But look, if you're scouting him, if you're sitting there behind home plate with, you know, your radar gun and your laptop like these scouts are, he's going to pass the eye test. Like, that's a good Toronto lineup on a super hot day when he didn't have his best stuff and he kept his team in the game and he gave you 18 outs. Like, no one's bringing him in to start game 1, 2, or 3 of a playoff chase. That's not why he's being acquired. And honestly, the fact that he was effective out of the pen, something he hadn't done in a long time, that might help the marketing of him to a better team, you know, who might need him to be in a swingman role. And instead of having to wonder how he can do that, he just did it. He did it for about 4 to 6 weeks before he pitched his way back into the rotation. So you're still not going to get a ton for him, but he proved to be an exemplary professional. He handled failure unlike he'd seen in a long time in his career, in a way that hopefully some of the younger guys there could appreciate and learn from.
He deserves a ton of credit. Again, if anyone would have said Charlie Morton would be a trade chip after April, you would have said that they were crazy. But another attractive piece thing about Charlie Morton is the fact that He's got plenty of postseason experience, Jason. He's pitched in 18 postseason games, 3.60 ERA.
Yeah, I mean, again, are you looking for him to start games?
No.
Perhaps not, but he has that magnetic personality. He's going to rub off on other people. He's going to be a positive sitting in your bullpen between starts or sitting in your dugout between starts. His preparation. I'm really interested to see where he goes. And part of me wonders if he ends up somewhere he's been before. Now, he's been a few places. He's been around a minute. But it wouldn't surprise me.
Coming up at 4:15, we're going to get back into Isaiah Likely. John Harbaugh just met with the media about 10 minutes ago saying that Likely is going to be out for at least a couple of weeks. He's going to undergo an MRI tomorrow. He rolled his ankle. Ravens will know more at that point. But coming up next, we're going to continue to talk Orioles. And it's totally Radley. Adley Rutschman, he returned off the IL last night. Looked like 2022-2023 Adley Rutschman. How crucial are the final 2 months of this season for Adley Rutschman's future? We'll tell you next on The Fan.
Swings away and drives the ball to deep center field. It will hit the base of the wall. Westberg is in. Henderson hot on his tail, and he is safe standing.
Kevin Brown on the call, courtesy of Masson. That happened during last night's 11-4 win, Orioles over the Blue Jays. They already knocked off the Blue Jays 16-4 game one of their doubleheader. Adley Rutschman was not in the lineup, but yesterday was the first time back in the lineup since his IL stint with the oblique. He had three hits in that game, Jason, including the two doubles. And we bring up June 21st all the time because that was the beginning of this downturn. And it coincided with Adley Rutschman's downturn. And I've said it for so long, and a lot of people agree, where this team has gone as Adley has gone. They were a losing ball club until he was brought up. He was brought up middle of May 2022. They went on a tear. They ended up having a winning record where no one could have seen coming prior to that year. They win 100 games in 23. He started in the All-Star game. 2024, on June 20th, they were the best team in baseball. Adley Rutschman was playing at an MVP caliber level at that point. Well, from June 21st to June 3rd, so almost a full calendar year, 131 games, over 500 plate appearances, 535 to be exact. Slash line, 205 batting average, 297 on base, 316 slug, 613 OPS.
That's abject failure.
Just 10 home runs, 41 RBI. Now, if you want to look at a glimmer of hope here, go to June 3rd. And unfortunately, June 19th, that was when he suffered the injury. Yes. And he was on the IL. But June 3rd in 16 games. Slash line, 333, 397 on base, 550 slug, 947 OPS. Now, it's only 16 games. It's a small sample size, but it was good to see him come off the IL yesterday and have a productive day because we know obliques can be tricky. That being said, these final 2 months are really crucial for Adley Rutschman in his future, where friend of the show, Ken Rosenthal, he reported, what, a week or two ago on Foul Territory and The Athletic, where the Orioles, they saw him as an extension candidate, maybe not so much anymore. Kenny even brought up the possibility that would it shock him if he got traded this offseason? No, but does he expect it to happen? Probably not. But Jason, this is a big run here because after this season, he's only got two more years of control.
If it doesn't improve markedly, I said it when we talked to Mike Bordick, I'll say it again, and they get a real general manager in here, he's gone. Like, you can't keep going down this road. He's regressed across the board. He's not a winning catcher. Like, take the failure at the plate out of it. He's not a winning catcher. So, yeah, I think he's if I'm somebody, if I'm like the Rays assistant GM, if I'm like, you know, the somebody in Milwaukee who's an up and coming executive, and I think I might be getting GM interviews with the Orioles. I mean, this is the guy I need to have a plan for ownership with Adley Rutschman. Like, if I think he was overdrafted, if I think he has shown you in this last year plus who he really is, then it's not selling low on him. It's just being able to sell on him and recoup other assets and start to look at the catcher position differently. Because if you think Sam Basayo is a real thing, then that takes first base off the plate for Adley. Because I don't think Basayo's catching more than a couple days a week. So whatever, between Mayo from the right side, Basayo from the left side, that doesn't, and Adley hasn't slugged enough, frankly, to be a DH bat or a middle of the order first base bat for any other real organization. Not the one that messed up and took him over Bobby Witt and keeps trying to prop him up. I'm talking about a real organization that would come in here and reset things and get the clown show out of town. So yes, I think he's under a unique limelight and maybe it'll bring out the best in him. But again, this is not a big sample. Whatever happens, he might play 47 more games.
But let's go down that rabbit hole, though. Let's say, all right, that bounce back that started at the beginning of June, he's able to pick back up where he left off prior to him getting hurt. How does that change the narrative? Are you still looking to move him maybe when his value is getting back up? He's got 2 years left. Do you think about maybe buying low on him in terms of an extension?
I would be. Truly elite ball players don't play god-awful baseball for over a calendar year. It does not happen. That's not a slump. That's not regression. That's failure. That's repeated failure. We're not even getting into what happens when people are on base and all that. Like we could look, like, again, we're not even really talking a whole lot about what's happened behind the plate. But like, that would scare the bejesus out of me, because the guy you propped up and trumped up as the one who's going to raise everybody up, there was no bigger albatross in Major League Baseball batting between second and fourth in a lineup. Okay, and sometimes they drop into fifth or sixth, but mostly between second and fourth. You can't find anybody else in baseball who kept getting that many plate appearances in those big of spots in a playoff team's roster who kept coming up that small. I mean,
It just feels like, though, a decision needs to be made on his future this offseason. You keep bringing up that point with Gunner after next year. When you get to that 2 year of control mark, it's kind of bleep or get off the pot, right? Where do you want to commit to him or do you not see him as part of your future? And you're high on Sam Basayo. You just drafted a couple of catchers at the beginning. First two picks in this year's draft, do you want to trade him at that point where he's not a rental? And then you have the 2 years. It seems like one of those, you got to pick a lane after this season's over.
A real front office would view it that way. If these guys keep their jobs, I don't think they view it that way whatsoever. They're about extending sample sizes, you know, into infinity as long as possible to hope eventually they look right. So I don't think they would do anything.
Well, let me say, and this kind of supports what you're saying, Ken Rosenthal is one of the best insiders in all of sports, much less just baseball. He's not just putting that out into the ether that the Orioles, they're unsure about Adley Rutschman's future in Baltimore. He's getting that from the warehouse.
I mean, is he getting it from, could he be getting it from ownership?
Possibly. But I'm saying, I think at that point, would it shock you if they, and this is, if Elias keeps his job and they would just run out the contract, I guess is what I'm saying. I think it would just be more inactivity.
If they keep that baseball operations staff in place, that's a sign of ownership failure. So I would expect them to continue to see transactional failure. If they're not being held to account by ownership, then why would I expect anything other than them to keep making the kind of mistakes they've made?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
That's,
I mean,
the prism that I'm going to look at it through. So do I think they're looking at... Now, that's not to say that somebody else just might have an Adley Rutschman fixation and might put enough in front of them. That, like the Brian Baker thing, the trade falls from the sky. I don't think that's likely. I can't say it's impossible. But like Adley Rutschman needs to sort of either redefine and rebrand himself to some degree, or the moniker of... I mean, not a 1-1 bust, but like not worthy of a 1-1. Like that's what he's, that's how it's looking. That's how it feels. We'll see if he can buck that trend.
Speaking of Buck, we're going to get back into baseball at the top of the hour. Buck Martinez is going to join us. Heck, does Buck even know what the heck is hit the Blue Jays over these first two games in which the Orioles have absolutely shellacked them? But we got plenty of Ravens talk the rest of the hour. We're going to get you some of the fresh sound from One Winning Drive. Ken Wyman is going to be coming back at some point from One Winning Drive, letting us know what he saw out at practice. It was another padded practice, and unfortunately, it ended on a sour note. Isaiah Likely was carted off the field. John Harbaugh said that he rolled his ankle, said that he's going to miss a few weeks, but he will undergo an MRI, and the Ravens will know more tomorrow. We'll get more into Isaiah Likely next on The Fan.
Yeah, we'll know more tomorrow. It's going to be a few weeks, though. You know, there's something. He rolled his ankle, foot area. So we'll get an MRI tomorrow and see exactly what it needs to be done. But it'll be a few weeks. It's good that it's this early in camp. So
that was Coach John Harbaugh. Gosh, less than an hour ago. Unfortunately, at the end of practice today, Isaiah Likely was carted off the field, and you just heard John Harbaugh rolled his ankle. He's going to undergo an MRI. Anytime you hear the cart involved, you fear the worst. But Jason, you brought up, there's been a couple of instances recently. Justin Fields, that was the first day at Jets camp. He got carted off and then was back on the practice field the next day. So maybe the Ravens and Isaiah Likely dodged a bullet here.
I'll say this. I didn't have a problem with the Ravens trying to figure out what market value was for Mark Andrews and being open to a trade if they could get value. I also told you guys all along, I'm very skeptical that the league's going to provide what they deem to be value. So Andrews is here. If this turns out to be 6 to 8 weeks, 8 to 10 weeks, and bleeds into the regular season, there's going to be a lot of people who are saying, well, man, I'm really, you know, I'm glad that Mark Andrews is here.
Absolutely.
And not whoever that fifth round pick would have been. So there's that component to it. They're always looking to develop players. Does this allow them to tap into Charlie Kohler a little bit? Is there a kid tight end totally off the radar who starts to get a run with, you know, the two, at least if not the ones, the twos, and maybe starts to open some eyes? I mean, there's always ways to try to benefit from this. But I'm also going to say, like, Harb's just saying a few weeks. Like, well, I mean, could that turn into 10 to 12 weeks? I don't know. There's a lot of ligaments there. I mean, there's a lot that...
I'm taking it with a grain of salt until they get the MRI.
We got to find out.
Yeah, with the MRI and then...
From the MRI. Now Isaiah Likely's also at a point where he's well versed enough in this offense to, like, I'm not worried about the timing with Lamar or any of that. He's one of those guys who has an intrinsic ability to see a scramble drill the same way Lamar does and figure out where the open space is going to be to provide that big target. And, you know, he's not afraid to leave his feet to make a play. So I'm not worried so much about the lost practice time. It's more obviously what's the extent of this injury truly going to turn out to be.
You're just hoping for the best with Isaiah Likely on a multitude of layers, but he's in a contract year. This would be the worst time to have a significant injury, and there were some rumblings on Twitter, depending on who you're looking at, that maybe they're getting closer to a contract extension with Likely. So anytime you see these type of situations, it's really, really rough. But again, you don't want to jump to any conclusions. And you hope that he's back as soon as possible. And like John Harbaugh said, you'd much rather have this sort of thing happen at the beginning of training camp on July 29th, as opposed to during a playoff run, like with Zay Flowers last
year. From the team standpoint, yes. Absolutely. From Isaiah Likely's standpoint, maybe not so much.
But
again, if this is something that is, you know, worst case scenario, 2-3 months, that shouldn't infringe upon their ability to continue to make momentum and work towards a long-term agreement. And that's just, you know, that's the time of year that this is football, and the pads are on and they're going pretty close to full speed. There are going to be injuries, and there are going to be teams who look back on July or early August and say, that's, didn't cost us the season, but that's when the football gods started telling us might not be our year.
Jason, go back to 2021 with the Ravens, where it was back-to-back plays in practice. Marcus Peters and Gus Edwards blew out their knee, and John Harbaugh said, you know what? We're done. Let's go inside. This is not worth it.
Yeah. It is a collision sport. It's a concussion sport. It's a vicious sport. Where the body is asked to do things that aren't particularly natural, and that comes, unfortunately, at a physical cost to these guys while they're playing, and for many of them, for decades and decades after they play. So everybody is sort of at the mercy of that, and there isn't a science that is going to solve it. There's no way to practice perfectly to avoid injuries. It's, as long as you're playing football, this stuff's going to happen, and you just hope that you have a deep enough roster to withstand it.
Ken Wyman is on his way back to our one
shirt.
Studios.
That was a bold decision, not to two-shirt it.
The athletic shirt.
Performance. Right. He thinks that's the solution. Yes. Right.
He tries it all.
Sure.
Kenny will be back. Okay. He'll give us his practice report in due time. But coming up next, we're going to hear more from John Harbaugh talking about who Chuck Smith called the centerpiece, one of the centerpieces of the defense, Tavius Robinson, the rest of the edge rusher group, and also the young guys. That's next. It's Inside Access on The Fan.
Well, I'll tell you, Tavius is a pretty special person, you know, and really an amazing player. I tell you, I mean, just the guy makes the most of everything he does every day, weight room, meeting room, practice field, every single rep. I see a very physical, good player who gets better every day. He's a big part of our team.
That was John Harbaugh earlier today following training camp practice talking about Tavius Robinson. And Tavius Robinson definitely seems like a Harbs kind of player, that try hard, gritty, tough, does all the dirty work. Chuck Smith during OTAs said that Tavius Robinson, one of the centerpieces of the defense, and Bobby D really liked Tavius Robinson heading into last year. He had 3.5 sacks, 32 tackles, 12 quarterback hits, and there were a couple of big time games last year, the Eagles and the Bills playoff game, in which Tavius Robinson played a lot more snaps than Adafe Owe.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think Adafe Owe has balked up because he knows that if he wants to get the opportunities to rush the passer on quote-unquote passing downs, then he's got to be a preferred guy on early downs as well. And I do think Tavius Robinson is ascending. I think the coaches want to reward him with more opportunities. I don't think he has some of the metrics physically that Owe has, but he does. You look at his body, and the Ravens have had success culling a lot of value at a guys who are kind of built like him. And let's face it, time is on his side here more than it probably is for Owe, who I think is playing his final year here, and I think all parties probably have a pretty good idea that is what it is. He'll be another one of these first round picks who plays it out and goes somewhere else for more money than the Ravens are probably willing to give him.
Tavius Robinson entering year 3, and something we've talked about a lot this offseason, where we wouldn't be surprised at all if the Ravens do add another edge rusher, whether it's a Clowney, whether it's a Judon, who you brought up earlier, Jason. But even if they don't, it's going to be a very competitive group? Do they keep five? Do they keep six? And here's John Harbaugh on how many guys they could keep on the edge.
I mean, that's a few weeks away. Of course, you know, I mean, I think about that every day. But you could keep six. You know, it's just a matter of how many D linemen you keep or how many inside backers or DBs you keep. So you can keep 25 or 26 defensive players probably. 24, 25, or 26, that's kind of how it could go. So I have to see how it shakes out. We've got a lot of days between now and then.
Do have a long time. We have a full preseason schedule before them. But the guys that are fighting for whether five or six spots, you got Van Noy, Dafe Owe, Mike Green, Tavius Robinson. Those guys, those four are locks. I think Adisa Isaac being a third-round pick last year is a lock. That's five right there. And then there's David Ajabo.
Well, and look, injuries are going to play a role
sure.
in this.
Yep.
You know, and not just injuries at this position group, but do injuries hit another position group hard to the point where they've got to take a few chances and bring a few depth guys who wouldn't have otherwise made the team at a position that has become a bit of a position in need because of attrition. This will be a group where, okay, so like Van Noy's not going to play. You know what I mean? Like,
Owe probably won't
play much, but everybody else.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They're going to get to sort it out a little bit in these joint practices and in these three games.
Yeah, our Beltway Ben Hall is going to be at the joint practice next week when the Ravens take on the Colts. It snuck up on us, Jason. Preseason football starts this Thursday. Hall of Fame game, Ravens preseason opener. Next Thursday.
It's like that second additional performance shirt to bring to practice. You don't know that you missed it until it's not there.
Yeah. Well, Ravens, they led the league in sacks in 2023. They were second in the league in sacks last year. But pass rush win rate, the consistent pressure, that has eluded them. They were 29th in pass rush win rate. And John Harbaugh was asked how important it is to be able to generate consistent pressure just rushing four.
Yeah, we'd love to have a great four-man pass rush, five-man pass rush, three-man pass rush, six-man pass rush, and seven-man pass rush because that's how we play, you know. So I don't think any Ravens fans want to see us, you know, rushing four all the time. It's really not what we've ever been about, ever. We are a blitzing team. But we're also, you know, we've also had great pass rushers here and a lot of guys who've gotten to the quarterback and done really well. A lot of Kyle Sacks were on four-man pass rushes last year and others. So we want to be able to do the whole gamut, but it's always an advantage to be able to rush four. And it's always an advantage to rush the four pass rushers too, not just the simulated also.
It's massive, especially when you consider the caliber of this secondary. If they could get consistent pass rush out of four, good luck for an opposing offense.
Yeah, I'm... When you're able, I think, to put Kyle Hamilton back where he's most effective, then I think that opens you up to doing some other things and people not being sure about what exactly he's up to within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage or 10 yards of the line of scrimmage, I think can create some matchups for other people. Like, is he going to be blitzing here? Is he going to show and then drop? It's the bringing of four. Yeah. But like rarely are they bringing four, but only showing four. It's getting back to the Mike McDonald thesis level of how many guys are a moving part and how much time do they have to figure out which four are coming? Like, do I think they'll remain somewhat conservative in that nature? Well, yeah, especially if it's not proven that they have to do otherwise in order to get some pass rush. But, like, who are the four?
That's a question. But also, we want to see more of an aggressive defense this year with the blitzing, getting to that next level with Zach Orr in year two. And just how they're able to kind of scheme it up, Jason, I think is going to be so big with Zach Orr, because it's getting to the next level defensively where you have an extremely talented secondary, but you can only cover for so long.
Yeah, I mean, balance is everything. And I don't think that they're as balanced as they may need to be by January to get further than they've got. Now, there's a lot of time between now and January for things to sort themselves out and for them to bring somebody in off the street and then also maybe address things at the trade deadline in a more meaningful way than we've seen in recent years. So this doesn't have to be solved now. And maybe Mike Green becomes a big part of the equation, and he's someone who people are losing sleep figuring out how they're going to block, especially how they're going to block in certain down and distances and certain personnel groupings. But I have a hard time thinking that there's not a veteran pass rusher added between now and the trade deadline.
Finally, from John Harbaugh, he was asked about the young guys' first few days in pads.
I thought they really, you know, worked hard. I thought they were physical. Didn't get overwhelmed by the fact that they were in pads, you know, at this level for the first time. A lot of the rookies, this is the first time at this, doing this kind of thing. So I thought they did well.
Yeah, I mean, for any rookie class, it's all about the first, right? They had their rookie mini camp, and then they were integrated with the vets in OTAs. Then they were integrated with the rest of the roster for mandatory mini camp. You had your first training camp, now your first training camp in pads for the rookies, first preseason game next week. And you want to see how these guys react because, look, there's some players that stand out when it's just shorts, but then when the pads come on, there are no shows.
Yeah, and look, we've done this whole segment here, and we haven't mentioned David Ajabo yet, right? And does he show up in a more meaningful way to alter the course of this whole numbers game and projections and needs? I have a hard time buying it, but it's now or never.
It's now or never, not just for his time in Baltimore. I think it's now or never for his NFL career.
It's definitely now or never for his time in Baltimore.
If it doesn't pan out for him this year, Jason, you can cling on to, hey, he would have been a top 15 pick, but you got to produce at some point.
And change the scenery. I mean, who knows?
Sure. No, he'd get another look outside of Baltimore. But I think this season, if he doesn't make the team this year and doesn't do much with it,
it's definitely show me something time.
Yes, it is. Well, hopefully we'll see Ken Wyman on the other side of this break. Ken Wyman shows himself at 105.7 The Fan. He was out at one winning drive. We'll get Ken's observations from Ravens training camp practice next on The Fan.
Ravens had a spirited day of practice at one winning drive. Day two of padded practice. Maybe they, but you know what they say. The second day of padded practice is the most spirited day of padded practice, especially when it's 150 degrees out
and
there.
And you're there in a performance
yes,
shirt.
Yes, yeah. Yes, yes. Shirt hung in there. It's yeah. hung in.
it did not fray at the seams.
No,
I can,
it did not.
I can,
look.
I can confirm that.
Can you tell it's any worse for wear, Jason?
No? I'm guessing when you were standing out there, perhaps.
It was.
May have been different.
The great thing about performance is you can't see it, but you can. It's you're
why they call it performance.
That's right. Okay. That's right. That is correct. obviously, and I'm sure, and I listened to you guys a little bit driving back, but the big news is Isaiah Likely, and it looked like it happened the last rep of practice. He was doing a one-on-one drill with Sanusi Kane, and went down. Harp said it's ankle, foot, going to miss a few weeks at least. MRI tomorrow. You know, what's interesting, as long as it's not, God forbid, an Achilles or a knee, if it's something that sidelines him for 6 weeks, this is the best time for that to happen. You know, knock on wood. You made a great point, Jason. Guys are going to get hurt, right? Guys, like, this is a collision sport. This is a violent game. You can't prevent injuries. If he's going to have an injury where he misses a month or a little more, this is the time to have it done.
Yeah, I mean, look, you just I don't know if it's, you know, if it's a ligament that,
sure,
that things can get tricky in there. But it's going to happen. Like, look, he's not the last player. And, you know, unfortunately, probably not the last significant player who's going to be carted off a practice field or carted off out of a stadium that's half full because the game doesn't count.
Yep.
And that's football. This kid's proven to be really durable to this point. He's in great shape, and he's someone who missing, if it is 5 to 8 weeks, whatever, just that's just a throwing out random numbers. Like, it's not going to alter the course of this offense. It's not going to set him back exponentially. He's immersed in this thing. He's an ascending player in an offense with a quarterback that he's incredibly comfortable with. and it will open up opportunities for others.
Well, and you said it. That's where the fact that we didn't know if Mark Andrews would still be here at this point, but the fact that he is still here, that's a hell of an insurance policy to have. A former All-Pro, a guy that led the NFL, or led tight ends in touchdown receptions last year, and has been Lamar Jackson's go-to guy. But you just hope, and I take what was said today with a grain of salt, because I want to hear what the MRI has. And then at that point, you can hopefully exhale.
What else caught your attention out there?
It was more physical. As I told you guys on the phone, like, they were hitting. Sanusi Kane had a monster hit on Keaton Mitchell. Bo Braid had a big hit on Marcus Major. I thought Lamar looked good early. Nice bat. By the way, Jair Alexander, and we'll hear from Adafe Owe tomorrow, because I asked him about Jair Alexander, because he talked about guys talking, and I said, well, speaking of talking, what are your initial impressions of Jair? And Adafe just lit up talking about him. This guy, somebody said to me out there, he's like a friendlier Marcus Peters. It was the comp I got, and which, you know how much I loved Marcus Peters when he was here until it went bad. But, like, he is playing to the crowd. His first rep after he came out late, like, you're watching, you know, the beat guys are chalking guys off as they see him, making sure who's in attendance. And you're wondering, is Jair going to be out there today, because he got his knee drained? And he comes out late and he's immediately yapping. And then first play, they go at him and he breaks up a pass. And, of course, he's yapping. I think it was Zay Flowers he broke up the pass. Immediately yapping at Zay Flowers. He's nonstop. Nate Wiggins looks great, by the way. Nate Wiggins looks great.
Yeah, I mean, it's clear that Jair Alexander has brought a different dynamic to this whole group on field and off.
And they need that.
Yeah, I absolutely.
Breaking news. The Toronto Blue Jays are acquiring right-handed reliever Sir Anthony Dominguez from the Orioles for right-handed pitching prospect Jerron Watts Brown.
It's funny. Like, we've got Buck Martinez joining us, and my first question to him was going to be, watching this Toronto bullpen the last couple of days, what do you think the odds are that when they leave town, they've got at least one Oriole reliever and maybe more with them? So, yeah.
What do you know about Jerron Watts Brown, Jason?
I don't. I don't know about Jerron Watts Brown.
For Dominguez, you just got to walk down the hall.
Yeah, just walk across the hall.
I mean, he's probably available for this game.
Yeah, he didn't pitch. He didn't. Right. Did he pitch yesterday?
He didn't pitch last night. He didn't pitch in the first game.
Can we get him a jersey?
Yeah, I would suspect he's pitching for the Blue Jays tonight.
I mean, they're like, you saw them bring in their best lefty in the fifth inning yesterday, trying to stop the bleeding and win one of these games. Like, they can ill afford, I think, a prolonged losing streak and losing that momentum and mojo they built up, because frankly, I'm not sure how they'd respond to it. And they're not a franchise that has handled expectations very well in years past. So this is a critical point for them. And I had a hunch that I didn't know it was going to be between games, but I had a hunch that these teams would do some business given the Orioles, what they have to offer, and what Toronto needs.
Interesting. I'll quickly get back to the Ravens. I was telling you this off the air, and I'll say it on the air. Mike Green looks like a dude. Like, he's got pass rush moves. He's got speed. He's got power. He looks legit. On the other hand, today was not a good day, at least from my eyes, from Adisa Isaac, who even against like third string tackles was not able to do much.
Yeah, it's going to be, we were just talking about it before you came in, it's going to be really interesting seeing this edge group during preseason, because Van Noy's not going to play, Owe's not going to play. The rest of them are going to play some serious snaps.
Yeah.
And they need to.
Yeah, it's I heard you guys talking. I think they're going to keep, and injuries throw a wrench in all this. I think they're going to keep six edge guys.
Wouldn't surprise me.
And now one of those guys, as you pointed out, Jason, could be a guy that's not here yet.
At some point it will be.
Yeah. Like, could it be a Matthew Judon? Could it be a Jadeveon Clowney? They're still out there. Za'Darius Smith. Coming up next here on the program, Orioles and Blue Jays in between games of a doubleheader. First pitch, 6:30, game two. Pregame coverage, Baltimore Baseball Night, 5:30. Bordy and the Bobster coming up at Pickles at 5:30. Buck Martinez, former O's broadcaster, now doing Blue Jays games, joins us next here on The Fan.